She seduced the king, a servant, carrying his heir. Tell me, your majesty, does this not disgust you?
Take her out of my sight. She is no longer welcome in this kingdom.
You will regret this, Garvin. One day, you will beg.
The candles in Moonfall Palace burned gold that night, but nothing about that evening felt warm. Aveline Hawthorne stood alone in the center of the full moon court, both hands pressed against her swollen belly, surrounded by nobles who had once smiled at her in the hallways and now would not meet her eyes. The air smelled of melted wax and old perfume. Somewhere above her, the great chandeliers trembled slightly, as if even the palace itself sensed what was about to happen. She seduced the king, Lady Seraphina Nightshade announced, her voice slicing through the silence like a blade through silk. A servant, carrying his heir. Tell me, your majesty, does this not disgust you? Alpha King Gauvin Mannix rose from his throne. His jaw was tight. His eyes, usually warm when they found her across a crowded room, were now cold enough to freeze the marble beneath her feet. Take her out of my sight, he said. She is no longer welcome in this kingdom. The court erupted into laughter. Guards seized her arms. Aveline did not fight them. She only curled her body around the twins growing inside her and whispered, so quietly that only the wind could hear it. You will regret this, Gauvin. One day, you will beg. She did not know, as the palace doors slammed shut behind her, that a fey prince was about to change everything. Before we go any further, if you've ever wanted to see a king fall to his knees, you are not going to want to miss what happens to Gauvin Mannix. Hit subscribe right now because this story only gets darker and only gets better. Also, quick warning. By the end of this video, you might develop a strong, irrational hatred for a fictional Alpha King who doesn't even exist. There is no known cure. The only treatment we've found so far is subscribing and watching what happens to him next. Side effects may include yelling at your screen, gasping out loud on public transport, and texting your group chat in all caps. Proceed at your own risk. Long before that night in Moonfall Palace, Aveline Hawthorne was nobody important. At least, that's what everyone believed. She scrubbed floors in the kitchens until her knuckles cracked in the winter cold. She mended torn cloaks for nobles who never bothered to learn her name, who tossed coins at her feet without ever looking down to see who picked them up. She slept in a small room above the stables, where the wind crept through the cracks in the wood and the horses stamped softly beneath her floorboards, and where the other servants whispered that she didn't belong, not because she was unkind, but because there was something different about her. Something none of them could name, but all of them could feel. The way you feel a storm coming before the first cloud appears on the horizon. What none of them knew, what Aveline herself barely understood, was that ancient Moonfey blood ran through her veins. Blood older than the Alpha Kingdom itself. Blood that had been hidden, buried, and forgotten for generations, passed down so quietly that even her own mother had not known what slept inside her daughter. She fell in love with King Gauvin Mannix in stolen moments. A glance across the dining hall when he thought no one was watching. A quiet conversation in the gardens after midnight when the rest of the palace slept and the only witnesses were the moon and the roses. He told her she made him feel like a man instead of a king, that with her he didn't have to carry the weight of a crown on every word he spoke. She believed him. She believed him completely, the way only someone who has never been chosen before believes the first person who ever does. Those midnight gardens became, for nearly a year, the only place in the entire kingdom where Aveline felt entirely herself. Gauvin would sneak away from council meetings and formal dinners to find her among the roses, and for an hour, sometimes two, the distance between a king and a servant simply ceased to exist. He asked about her childhood, about the mother she had lost too young, about the small dreams she'd never told anyone else. She asked nothing of him in return except his honesty, and for a long while, she believed she had it. She should not have. Because in the shadows of Moonfall Palace, Lady Seraphina Nightshade had been watching, waiting, and plotting for the crown that she believed belonged to her by birthright, by beauty, by sheer force of ambition. A pregnant servant girl was the only thing standing in her way, and Seraphina had spent her entire life learning how to remove obstacles without ever getting her own hands dirty. What happened next would tear apart a kingdom, build an empire from nothing, awaken a bloodline thought extinct for 1,000 years, and prove one simple truth that the Alpha Kingdom would spend years learning the hard way. The people we cast aside in our pride are sometimes the very people who could have saved us. If only we had looked a little closer before we threw them away. This is the story of Aveline Hawthorne, the maid they humiliated in front of an entire court, the mother the kingdom underestimated, the queen they never saw coming until she was already standing in their throne room and it was far, far too late to stop her. The accusation began 3 days before the trial, though Aveline would not understand that until much later. Lady Seraphina Nightshade had spent months collecting whispers, bribing healers, and twisting half-truths into something that looked, from a distance, almost like proof. She did not love Govan Mannix. She had never loved him, not for a single day of their long and careful courtship. She loved his crown, his army, and the title of Luna Queen that came with his hand in marriage, and a pregnant servant girl threatened all three at once, in a way Seraphina found personally, deeply unforgivable. "The healer will confirm what we need her to confirm," Seraphina told her handmaiden one evening, swirling a glass of dark wine between manicured fingers as candlelight flickered across her sharp, beautiful face. "Coin loosens tongues faster than truth ever does. And the king will believe whatever protects his pride. Men always do." She was right, and it would take years for anyone in that palace to understand just how right she had been. For 2 weeks, Seraphina worked quietly in the background of palace life, smiling at Aveline in the corridors, complimenting her on her needlework, all while assembling the pieces of a lie elaborate enough to survive a royal trial. She paid a young healer named Renna a sum large enough to feed a village for a year in exchange for a single false report. She intercepted letters. She planted seeds of doubt in the ears of nobles who had no real opinion of Aveline either way until those seeds grew into something that resembled consensus. And quietly, carefully, over the course of several nights, she began lacing Gauvin's wine with a rare and bitter herb called duskroot, a plant known among certain old fey bloodlines for its ability to cloud judgment and twist memory, just enough to make a confident man doubt what his own heart had once been certain of. Gauvin did not notice the bitterness beneath the sweetness of his usual vintage. He only noticed that his thoughts had grown foggy, that his temper had grown short, that something inside him felt off balance in a way he could not name. He did not feel like himself. He had not felt like himself in days. And in his confusion, fear began to masquerade as clarity, the way it so often does in men who have never learned to question their own certainty. On the night of the full moon court, every noble family in the Alpha Kingdom gathered beneath the vaulted ceilings of Moonfall Palace, their finest furs and jewels catching the candlelight, their voices a low hum of gossip and anticipation. Word had already spread that something significant was about to happen. Court gatherings always carried an electric undercurrent when scandal was in the air, and tonight that undercurrent was almost unbearable. Aveline had not been invited. She had been summoned, which was a very different thing entirely. She walked into that hall already trembling, already certain something was wrong, though she did not yet understand how wrong. Her hands rested instinctively over the small swell of her stomach, 5 months along now, though she had hidden it as long as she could beneath layers of servant's wool and careful posture. She had told no one except Gauvin himself in a quiet moment 3 weeks earlier, when his face had lit up with something she had mistaken for joy. "A child," he had whispered then, pressing his forehead to hers. "Our child, Aveline." She had believed in that moment that everything would be all right. Now, walking into a hall full of staring faces, she searched for that same warmth in his expression and found nothing but a stranger wearing the king's face. Gauvin sat on his throne, flanked by advisors she barely recognized, men who had appeared at his side only in recent weeks, men whose loyalty, she would later learn, had been quietly purchased by Serafina's family fortune. His eyes found hers across the room, and for one breath, one single fragile breath, she thought she saw something soften in his face, some flicker of the man who had held her in the gardens and called her his. Then, Serafina stepped forward, and whatever flicker of warmth had existed extinguished completely. "Your Majesty," she said, loud enough for the entire court to hear, her voice dripping with manufactured sorrow. "This woman has deceived you. She is no innocent maid. She seduced her way into your bed for her own gain, and now she carries a child she intends to use as a weapon against your throne. I have proof. Healer Rena will confirm everything." Whispers rippled through the crowd like wind through dry leaves. A young healer Aveline barely recognized stepped forward, refusing to meet her eyes, and recited a story so far from the truth that for a moment Aveline simply stood frozen, unable to process the scope of the lie being told about her own body, her own child, her own life. "That isn't true," Aveline said, her voice shaking but clear, carrying further than she expected in the sudden silence. "Gauvin, you know that isn't true. You know what we shared. You know this child is yours." But Gauvin did not look at her the way he used to. His eyes had gone distant, glassy, almost unfocused, as though he were looking at her through fog. "Is it true?" he asked her, his voice cold and strange. "Did you plan this from the beginning? Did you mean to trap me into a marriage you knew the court would never accept?"
"No,"
Aveline whispered, tears finally breaking free and sliding down her cheeks. "Gauvin, please, look at me. Please, you know me. You know this isn't who I am." "Take her out of my sight," he said, his voice rising, cracking with an anger that did not feel entirely his own. "She is no longer welcome in this kingdom." The court laughed. Some clapped. A few looked away, ashamed, their eyes flicking briefly toward Aveline with something that might have been sympathy, but none of them spoke up. None of them dared. Guards seized her by the arms, their grip rough and impersonal, as though she were nothing more than an unwanted piece of furniture being removed from the room. She did not scream. She only wrapped her hands around her belly, protecting the only thing in that entire palace that still belonged to her, and let them drag her through the golden doors and out into the freezing night air. The last thing she heard before the doors slammed shut behind her was Serafina's voice, sweet as poisoned honey, carrying clearly across the suddenly quiet hall. "Goodbye, little maid. Try not to freeze before morning." Aveline stood alone in the snow outside Moonfall Palace, banished from the only home she had ever known, her thin servant's cloak doing almost nothing against the bitter cold, carrying twins the kingdom would one day beg, on bended knee, to meet. She did not know it yet, but somewhere far beyond the palace walls, in a hidden kingdom most of the Alpha Kingdom didn't even believe was real, fate was already arranging the next chapter of her life. The first night was the hardest, though Aveline did not yet know how much harder it would get. She walked until the lights of Moonfall Palace disappeared behind her, swallowed by forest and falling snow, the golden glow of windows shrinking smaller and smaller until even the memory of warmth felt distant. She had nowhere to go. No coin in her pockets, no allies waiting in the dark, no plan beyond simply putting one foot in front of the other. The kingdom's borders stretched for miles in every direction, and every village within them had already heard, or would soon hear, the rumors that had been so carefully designed to destroy her. "The king's whore," they called her, when they bothered to call her anything at all. No pack would take her in. She knocked on the doors of farmhouses she had once delivered mended cloaks to, and watched the same hands that had once paid her fairly for her work now slam doors shut in her face the moment they recognized her. No village hired her, not even to scrub their floors, not even for half wages, not even out of pity. Doors closed in her face one after another, a slow accumulation of small cruelties that wore her down far more effectively than any single large one could have. Children were pulled away from her path as if her presence might curse them. Mothers crossing the street with their little ones to avoid walking near the disgraced servant girl. Winter deepened around her like a closing fist. Her pregnancy did not slow down to accommodate her suffering. If anything, it seemed to accelerate, as though the babies inside her sensed the urgency of their mother's circumstances and were determined to grow strong enough to survive them. By the third month of wandering, Aveline had grown thin in places that frightened her when she looked down at her own body, and swollen in places that ached constantly, a strange and cruel combination that left her exhausted from dawn until the moment she finally collapsed into whatever shelter she could find. She pressed her palm against her belly every single night, in barns and hollow trees and beneath bridges, and whispered to the twins growing inside her, her voice barely more than breath in the cold air. "I will find a way," she told them, though she no longer entirely believed it herself. "I promise you both. I will find a way, even if I have to crawl through every village in this kingdom to do it." The kingdom's rumors grew crueler with distance, as rumors so often do, gaining detail and venom the further they traveled from the truth. By the time the story reached the southern villages, she was no longer a wrong servant girl. She was a liar, a seductress, a desperate woman who had tried to steal a crown for herself and failed spectacularly in front of the entire court. Nobody asked why a heavily pregnant woman would invent such a dangerous and self-destructive lie. Nobody wondered why the king's advisors had been so suspiciously quick to believe Serafina's manufactured evidence, or why a healer nobody had heard of before that night had suddenly appeared with such damning testimony. The kingdom preferred the simple story. The simple story was easier to believe, easier to repeat over supper tables, easier to laugh about when the wine had loosened tongues. The simple story did not require anyone to feel guilty. In the second month of her wandering, an elderly weaver named Odessa took her in for 3 quiet, almost peaceful nights, asking no questions, offering bread and a warm corner by the fire without judgment. For those 3 nights, Aveline allowed herself to believe the worst might be behind her. On the 4th morning, Odessa's son returned from the village market with news of who she was. By nightfall, Aveline was back on the road, Odessa's apologetic, frightened face the last kindness she would see for many weeks. "I'm sorry," the old woman had whispered, pressing a single heel of bread into Aveline's hands at the door. I have grandchildren in that village. I can't risk what they'll say about my family if you stay. Aveline did not blame her. She understood with a clarity that ached exactly how fear worked on people who had everything to lose and nothing to gain by being brave for a stranger. Aveline stopped trying to convince anyone of the truth somewhere around the fourth month. She simply tried to survive, one day at a time, one meal scrounged from frozen earth, one night spent shivering beneath whatever cover she could find. She did not know that something ancient had begun to stir inside her, something that had been dormant for generations, waiting patiently across decades and centuries for a moment of desperation severe enough to finally wake it. Her Moonfae blood, buried so deep she had never even suspected it existed, had begun responding to her suffering the way a seed buried in frozen ground responds against all odds to the first thaw of spring. But seeds need more than rain to grow. They need warmth. And by the fifth month, shivering and exhausted in a kingdom that had collectively decided to forget her existed, Aveline had none left to give. One night, starving and shaking with the early signs of fever, she stumbled toward a wall of ancient trees the villagers called the Forbidden Silverwood, a place spoken of only in warnings, in stories told to frighten misbehaving children, in tales passed down through generations of hunters who claimed the woods beyond it were not entirely of this world. Nobody entered the Silverwood willingly. Hunters who wandered too close to its edges sometimes returned with strange, unsettling stories of lights moving between the trees. Others who ventured deeper never returned at all. The Fae who were said to live beyond it were described in those old village tales as cruel, immortal, untouchable by human or wolf alike, beings who guarded their borders with magic no mortal could hope to survive. Aveline did not care anymore. She had nothing left to lose, and the cold pressing against her skin felt, in that moment, more frightening than any old wives' tale about immortal monsters in the trees. She walked into the Silverwood as the last of her strength gave out beneath her, snow falling silently around her shoulders, the bitter cold finally winning the long, exhausting fight her body had waged for months without rest. Her vision blurred. Her legs trembled, then buckled. The final thing she remembered, before darkness swallowed her completely, was the sight of pale blue light glowing softly beneath an ancient, dying moon tree just ahead of her. A light that seemed almost to be waiting for her, reaching toward her the way a hand reaches toward someone falling, and then nothing at all. Egerton Graves had not meant to be anywhere near Silverwood that night. As Prince of the Hidden Fae Kingdom of Auralune, he rarely ventured this close to the human and wolf territories that bordered his realm. The Silverwood marked the ancient boundary between his world and theirs, a thinning place where the magic of two very different kingdoms brushed against each other, and few outsiders ever crossed it and lived to speak of what they found on the other side. But that night, the ancient moon trees scattered throughout the forest had begun to glow, a phenomenon that had not occurred in over 200 years, not since the days when the old prophecies were still spoken aloud in Auralune's Great Hall instead of dismissed as legend. Egerton felt the shift before he saw it. A pulse of old, deep magic, faint but unmistakable, threading through the air like a heartbeat that did not belong to him, calling him steadily toward the heart of the forest with an insistence he could not ignore. He left his guards at the edge of the trees and went alone, moving silently through snow that did not crunch beneath his boots the way it should have, his senses sharpened by centuries of training to a level few mortal creatures could comprehend. He found her beneath the dying tree, half buried in fresh snow, her lips tinged blue, her body curled protectively around the visible swell of her stomach, even as unconsciousness claimed her completely. For a long moment, Egerton simply stood and stared, trying to understand what he was looking at. A human woman, deep in the forbidden silverwood, in a state that suggested she had walked here deliberately or been driven here by something with no other options left. He knelt beside her instinctively, and the moment his hand touched her skin to check for a pulse, he felt it. Power. Ancient, sleeping power, woven so deeply into her blood that it had to be Moonfae in origin, a bloodline Egerton had believed, like most of his people, to be extinct for nearly 1,000 years, wiped out in the old wars between Fae and Wolf that had carved the current borders of both kingdoms. He had read about Moon Fae blood in old texts, in stories his grandmother used to tell. He had never expected to feel it pulsing faintly beneath his fingertips in the body of a freezing, starving human woman. "Who are you?" he whispered, though she could not answer, her breathing shallow and labored in the cold night air. He lifted her into his arms without a second's hesitation, her body alarmingly light despite the visible pregnancy, and carried her through the Silverwood, past the ancient boundary no ordinary human had ever crossed and survived, into the hidden, shimmering kingdom of Auralune. Behind him, the dying moon tree's pale blue glow slowly faded, as though it had served its purpose and could finally rest. Aveline woke 3 days later in a bed softer than anything she had ever known in her life, wrapped in layers of warmth, the deep ache of starvation finally beginning to ease from her bones for the first time in months. Sunlight filtered through windows unlike any she had ever seen, casting strange, beautiful patterns across walls carved with intricate designs she didn't recognize. A woman with silver hair and kind, patient eyes sat beside her bed, watching her with quiet attentiveness. "You're safe," the woman said gently, her voice carrying a musical quality that didn't quite sound human. "My name is Lelia. I'm the kingdom's chief healer. The prince found you. You and your children are safe now." Aveline did not believe her. Not fully. Not yet. Safety was not a word the world had offered her in months, and trust did not come easily to someone who had been betrayed by the people closest to her. But when Egerton Graves entered the room a few moments later and knelt beside her bed, his expression open and unguarded in a way Govan's had never once been, something in her chest loosened, just slightly, like a knot finally beginning to come undone after being pulled tight for far too long. She studied his face for a long moment, searching for the catch, the hidden cost, the eventual demand that experience had taught her always followed even the kindest-sounding offers. She found none. It unsettled her almost as much as it comforted her, and she filed the feeling away to examine later, when her body wasn't quite so exhausted from simply staying alive. "You don't owe me anything," he told her, his voice steady and sincere. "You don't have to explain what happened to you or why you were in that forest or who you are. You're welcome here for as long as you need. There are no conditions attached to that." "Why?" Aveline asked, her voice raw and disbelieving. "You don't even know me. You don't know anything about me." Egerton considered the question seriously, the way he considered most things, taking his time before answering rather than offering empty reassurance. "Because no one chose to help you," he said finally. "I could see that clearly enough in the state I found you in. And I think that is one of the cruelest things a kingdom can do to a person, to simply look away while someone suffers and call that neutrality. I won't be a part of that. Whatever happened to you, whoever hurt you, that isn't who you have to be here." For the first time since the night she was dragged from Moonfall Palace, Aveline cried, not from grief this time, but from something she had almost forgotten existed entirely. Relief. the simple, overwhelming relief of being seen by someone who expected nothing from her in return. In the weeks that followed, Egerton kept his word completely. He asked nothing of her. He did not press her for the story of the twins' father, though Lelia clearly suspected something significant from the way Aveline flinched at any mention of kings or palaces and the captain of the prince's personal guard. A sharp-eyed, quick-witted fey warrior named Gemini made no secret of his curiosity either, watching Aveline with a guarded, assessing expression whenever she crossed his path in the palace gardens. "You're hiding something," Gemini told her bluntly one afternoon, several weeks into her recovery, as she sat in the gardens watching butterflies drift between flowers that bloomed even in what should have been winter. "I don't need to know what it is. I only need to know it isn't going to put the prince in danger." "It won't," Aveline said quietly. "I promise you that." Gemini studied her for a long moment, then nodded once, apparently satisfied, and walked away without further comment. It was, Aveline would later realize, the beginning of a fierce and unlikely loyalty between them. Gemini never warmed to her with easy charm, but he never doubted her again after that conversation, and his protectiveness over her and the twins would prove, in years to come, to be unshakable. Egerton, for his part, began teaching Aveline about her own blood, the Moonfae heritage she had never known she carried, passed down through a grandmother she had never met, and a family history that had been deliberately hidden for generations to protect her bloodline from exactly the kind of danger she had just barely survived. He showed her old texts, half-faded illustrations of Moonfae ancestors who had once walked openly among both Fae and human kingdoms before persecution drove the last of them into hiding. "Your family buried this for a reason," Egerton told her one evening, the two of them sitting beside a fire while Lelia checked on her in the next room. "They wanted to keep you safe from people who feared what you might become. I think, in some strange way, they succeeded. You survived long enough to wake it on your own." Slowly, carefully, something unfamiliar began to grow between Aveline and the prince, who had saved her life with no expectation of anything in return. Not romance, not yet, not by a long way. Something steadier, something quieter and more patient. Something that didn't demand anything from her broken, exhausted heart before she was ready to give it. But every night, when the kingdom of Aurelun fell quiet and the candles burned low, Aveline still pressed her hand to her belly and thought of golden eyes across a crowded throne room, of stolen moments in moonlit gardens, of a voice that had once called her child, our child, with what she had believed, with her whole heart, was joy. She still loved Govan Mannix, even after everything he had done to her, even after everything his court had done in his name. And she hated herself for it, quietly, in the dark, where no one else could see. The twins came on a clear spring night, beneath a tree the Fae called the Moon Blossom, an ancient, sacred tree said to bloom only when something extraordinary was about to happen in the kingdom of Aurelun. It bloomed that night for the first time in 300 years. Aveline's labor was long and frightening, stretching from dusk well past midnight, and more than once Lelia's calm, practiced expression tightened with a worry she tried very hard to hide from her patient. The midwives who assisted her moved with quiet urgency, exchanging glances over Aveline's bed that she was too exhausted and in too much pain to fully interpret. Outside, Egerton paced the length of the corridor for hours, refusing every gentle attempt by the palace staff to send him away to rest, until finally, just before the first hint of dawn touched the horizon, the unmistakable cries of two newborn boys broke through the heavy silence of the palace. "Twins," Lelia announced, stepping outside the chamber with exhausted but genuine joy on her face. "Healthy, both of them, strong lungs and all. Egerton entered the room slowly, almost reverently, as though crossing the threshold of something sacred, and looked at the boys properly for the first time as Aveline, pale, drained, but smiling for the first time in what felt like years, held up the two small bundles in her trembling arms. "Orion," she whispered, nodding to the first, slightly larger boy. "And Lucian," she added, nodding to his brother, who had arrived only minutes after. Egerton knelt beside the bed and looked at the boys with careful, focused attention. He saw it immediately, the unmistakable golden eyes of an alpha bloodline paired unexpectedly with the delicate, slightly pointed ears of the Fae, and faint silver markings curling along their tiny wrists that Egerton recognized instantly as ancient moon fae birthmarks, the same markings he had read about in texts so old their pages crumbled at the edges. "They're going to be powerful," he said quietly, his voice filled with something between awe and reverence. "More powerful than either kingdom currently realizes. This hasn't happened in generations, Aveline. Maybe ever. Not quite like this." "They're going to need a father," Aveline said, her voice cracking with exhaustion and grief intertwined. "And they doesn't even know they exist. He never will, not if I have anything to say about it." Egerton was quiet for a long moment, his eyes moving from the twins to Aveline's tired, tear-streaked face. "Then let me be the one who's here," he said finally. "Not because I have to be, not out of obligation or pity. Because I want to be, Aveline. Because I have wanted to be, since the night I found you beneath that dying tree and realized I had never once met anyone who deserved to be chosen as badly as you did." It was not a declaration of romance. It was something simpler and somehow far heavier. A vow, quiet and unshakable, spoken in a dim room beneath the soft cries of two newborn boys. Over the following months, Egerton kept that vow completely, without wavering, without ever once treating it as a burden. He learned how to soothe Orion's nightmares, which came frequently and violently in those early months, by humming an old fae lullaby Lelia taught him. He learned how to make Lucian, the more serious and watchful of the two brothers even as an infant, laugh until he hiccuped, simply by making increasingly ridiculous faces at him during quiet afternoon naps. He stayed up through fevers and teething and the thousand small, exhausting terrors of new parenthood, never once treating the boys as anything less than entirely his own, never once making Aveline feel as though she carried the weight of motherhood alone. The twins grew, as children do, with startling speed. Orion proved bold and curious from his earliest steps, forever chasing butterflies through the garden and climbing things he had no business climbing. Lucian was quieter, more observant, the kind of child who watched everything around him with careful golden eyes before deciding how to respond to it. And one ordinary sun-warmed afternoon, while Egerton knelt in the garden helping Orion chase a particularly persistent butterfly, the boy looked up at him with wide golden eyes, breathless from running, and said the word that changed everything. "Father." Egerton went very still, his hand frozen mid-reach toward the butterfly. Aveline, watching from the doorway with a basket of fresh linens balanced on her hip, pressed a hand over her mouth. Lucian, who had been quietly building a tower of smooth river stones nearby and never one to be outdone by his brother, abandoned his project and toddled over with great determination, repeating the word just as confidently. "Father," Egerton lifted them both into his arms at once, one on each hip despite their wriggling protests, and for the first time since Aveline had arrived in Auralun, half-frozen and broken beyond words, she watched the Fae Prince's careful, composed exterior crack completely open. He held the boys close against his chest and did not bother hiding the tears that had gathered in his eyes. I'm here, he told them, his voice thick with emotion. I'm not going anywhere. Not ever. Do you understand me? Not ever. Aveline watched the three of them together. This prince who owed her absolutely nothing, who had simply chosen to love her sons as though they were carved from his own heart, with no blood obligation requiring it of him, and felt something shift quietly inside her chest, like ice beginning to crack along the surface of a frozen lake. It did not erase her lingering feelings for Gauvin, not yet, not entirely. But it planted a question inside her that she was not yet ready, or brave enough, to answer honestly. What was love, really, if not exactly this? That night, after the boys had finally fallen asleep, exhausted from a long day of chasing butterflies and building towers, Aveline found Egerton sitting alone on the palace balcony, looking out over the moonlit gardens of Auraloon. Thank you, she said softly, settling into the chair beside him. For today, for all of it, really. For everything you've given them that you never had to give. You don't need to thank me, Egerton said, glancing at her with a small, tired smile. I told you that the first night you woke up here. There are no conditions on what I've given your sons, Aveline. There never will be. I know, she said quietly. That's exactly why I keep thanking you anyway. 4 years are about to disappear in a heartbeat, and when you see what Aveline becomes, you won't recognize the broken girl from the snow. Subscribe now, because her glow-up is only the beginning of her revenge. 4 years passed in the hidden kingdom of Auraloon. 4 years that transformed nearly everything about Aveline's life so completely that the frightened, starving servant girl who had once collapsed beneath a dying moon tree felt increasingly like a memory belonging to someone else entirely. The twins grew from toddlers into bright, sharp-eyed boys who ran through the gardens of Auraloon as though the entire kingdom belonged to them, which, in many quiet and important ways, it had genuinely begun to. Orion had grown into a fearless, mischievous child who charmed every member of the palace staff into giving him extra sweets, while Lucian had developed a serious, almost scholarly fascination with the old fae texts in the palace library, often found curled up in corners with books far too advanced for his age, simply because something in him needed to understand how things worked. Aveline was no longer the starving girl who had collapsed in the snow, barely able to stand. The years of safety, steady nourishment, and renewed purpose had transformed her physically and emotionally in ways that surprised even Laelia, who had nursed her back from the very edge of death. But it was the discovery and gradual mastery of her moon fae magic that changed the entire trajectory of her life. It began almost by accident in the second year after the twins' birth. Egerton noticed, quite by chance, that Aveline's hands seemed to glow faintly whenever she touched wounded or wilting plants in the garden, healing them within minutes of contact. Laelia, fascinated by the discovery, began carefully testing the limits of this ability under controlled circumstances, and discovered it extended far beyond simple plant life. Aveline's blood, once dormant for generations, had fully and completely awakened, and the magic within her proved to be both rare and remarkably potent. Together, Egerton and Aveline began a long process of careful experimentation, spending countless evenings in Auraloon's old apothecary workshops, testing combinations of rare silverwood flowers infused with Aveline's awakened magic. Within a year, they had created something unprecedented in either kingdom's history: moon blossom elixirs, healing potions of extraordinary potency capable of mending wounds that ordinary medicine could not touch, brewed from the rare flowers of the silverwood and deepened by Aveline's ancient bloodline. Alongside the elixirs came enchanted fabrics, woven with threads that shimmered faintly under moonlight and never tore, never faded, and never wore thin, no matter how roughly they were handled. The Fae Kingdom's trade routes, once modest and largely insular, exploded outward across the continent with startling speed. Merchants from distant lands, hearing whispered rumors of miraculous healing potions and unbreakable fabric, began making careful, sometimes dangerous pilgrimages to Orelun's borders, desperate to secure even a single bottle of moon blossom elixir or a single bolt of the shimmering cloth. Aveline negotiated nearly every significant contract herself, sharp and unflinching in business dealings in a way the frightened servant girl from Moonfall Palace's kitchens could never have imagined becoming. It was during this period of rapid expansion that she met Justus Veyron, a traveling merchant lord with an unusually solid reputation for honesty in an industry built largely on deception and exaggeration. Justus had first arrived in Orelun seeking trade rights to a single shipment of elixirs. He left weeks later as one of Aveline's most trusted business allies and eventually a genuine friend whose counsel she came to value deeply. Gemini, ever protective of the family he had quietly adopted as his own responsibility, personally supervised every trade caravan that left Orelun's borders, ensuring nothing and absolutely no one threatened Aveline or the twins during their increasingly frequent travels. "You used to flinch every time someone raised their voice near you," Justus observed one evening, watching Aveline calmly negotiate a particularly aggressive merchant down to half his original asking price without ever once raising her own voice. "I don't think I've seen you flinch in over a year." "I had a lot of practice being afraid," Aveline replied evenly, not looking up from the ledger she was reviewing. "I'm choosing not to keep practicing it." Lelia, who had spent 2 full years cataloging the boundaries of Aveline's awakened magic with the patient thoroughness of a scholar uncovering a lost language, often said the same thing to anyone who would listen, that watching Aveline grow into her power was unlike anything she had witnessed in centuries of healing work. "Moonfey magic isn't given," Lelia explained to Egerton one quiet evening, the two of them watching from a balcony as Aveline knelt in the garden below, her palms pressed against a row of frostbitten seedlings that slowly, visibly unfurled green again beneath her touch. "It's remembered. Every wound she heals, every season she survives, the blood remembers a little more of what it used to know. I don't think she's anywhere near the limit of it yet." "And if she is?" Egerton asked quietly. "Then this kingdom has already seen more wonder in 2 years than it saw in the previous 200, Lelia said simply. "I'd call that more than enough." It was Gemini, oddly enough, who first suggested turning the elixirs into something more than a private gift shared quietly among Orelun's own people. He had grown tired, he admitted bluntly one evening, of watching outside traders arrive at the border begging for scraps of magic they didn't understand and couldn't properly value. "Charge them what it's actually worth," he told Aveline flatly. "You've spent your whole life being undervalued by people who decided your worth for you. Don't make the same mistake with your own magic." Aveline took the advice seriously, and within months, what had begun as a handful of healing potions brewed for the comfort of Orelun's own people had become the foundation of an empire that no one, least of all Aveline herself, 4 years earlier, freezing and starving in a forgotten forest, could have predicted. Within 4 years, Aveline Hawthorne became known across 3 kingdoms by a single increasingly famous title, the wealthiest merchant lady alive. Entire noble houses across the continent quietly depended on her trade agreements to maintain their fortunes. Entire harvests in struggling regions were saved by carefully distributed elixirs. Entire regional economies bent, slowly and invisibly, around the influence of the woman a king had once dragged through golden doors and thrown into the snow without a second thought. Meanwhile, far from Orelun's protected borders, the Alpha Kingdom was falling apart in ways its court refused to fully acknowledge, even to themselves. Harvest failed without clear explanation, season after season, as though the very soil had turned against them. Trade routes that had once flowed steadily began to collapse under mismanagement and growing instability. The ancient magic that had long protected Moonfall Palace's lands grew thin and unreliable, flickering like a candle running out of wax. Govan Mannix grew colder and more withdrawn with each passing season, haunted by a guilt he refused to name even in the privacy of his own mind, pressured constantly and relentlessly by Serafina Nightshade toward a marriage he could never quite bring himself to finalize, no matter how many times she pushed the matter before his council. "The kingdom needs stability," Serafina told him one evening, 4 years almost to the day after Aveline's banishment, her voice carrying the same persuasive sweetness it always had. "The kingdom needs a queen, Govan. It's been long enough." "I know what the kingdom needs," Govan replied, his voice flat and distant. "I am simply not yet convinced you are it." It was around this same time that Eustace Veyron, now a frequent visitor to Moonfall Palace through his expanding trade dealings on Aveline's behalf, began noticing small but troubling irregularities in the old court records during a routine review of trade history. Gaps in the healer's reports from 4 years prior. Missing testimony that should have existed but didn't. Witnesses who had simply, conveniently disappeared from the kingdom entirely in the months following a certain scandalous trial. He said nothing yet, certain only that something about the official story didn't quite add up. But he began asking quiet, careful questions in the right ears, the kind of questions that take years to fully bear fruit. Aveline, thousands of miles away and consumed by the steady, demanding work of building an empire while raising two remarkable boys, knew nothing of any of this. She only knew that her sons were thriving beyond anything she could have imagined for them in the snow 4 years earlier, that her trade empire was growing with each passing season, and that the prince who had saved her life with no conditions attached had slowly, carefully, become someone she could no longer imagine living her life without. What she did not yet know was that her own remarkable success was about to drag her back, against every instinct she possessed, to the one place she had sworn on the night she was banished that she would never willingly return. The Alpha Kingdom's council chamber had not seen this much tension in years, perhaps not since the night of Aveline's trial itself. "We need new trade agreements, Your Majesty, and we need them immediately," Eustace Veyron told the king bluntly, spreading a series of detailed ledgers across the long council table for emphasis. "Our harvests have failed 3 seasons in a row. Our gold reserves are nearly exhausted. There is exactly one merchant house wealthy enough and willing enough under the right terms to save this kingdom from genuine collapse, and their representative is arriving at the palace today." Govan Mannix did not look up from the window, where he had been standing for the better part of an hour, watching gray clouds gather over lands that no longer produced what they once had. He had grown thinner over the years, his once proud bearing now visibly weighed down by something he could never quite name aloud, something that kept him awake long after the rest of the palace had gone quiet. "Then deal with them yourself," he said wearily. "I have no particular interest in merchants, Eustace. Handle the negotiations." "Your Majesty," Eustace said carefully, choosing his next words with deliberate precision, "I believe quite strongly that you'll want to be present for this particular negotiation." Govan did not understand the weight behind that statement until the great doors of Moonfall Palace's main hall swung open that afternoon. The assembled court fell into immediate, startled silence as the visiting trade party entered the hall. At the front walked a fey prince in pale, elegant armor that caught the afternoon light beautifully. Egerton Graves, whose reputation as Araloon's heir and chief diplomat had reached even the most isolated corners of the Alpha Kingdom's borders over the past several years. Beside him walked 2 boys, perhaps 8 or 9 years old now, dressed in fine traveling cloaks that marked them clearly as nobility, their striking golden eyes scanning the unfamiliar hall with unmistakable confidence and curiosity rather than the nervousness one might expect from children entering a foreign court. And beside them, completing the procession with an unmistakable air of quiet command, walked a woman the entire court recognized in the span of a single, horrified, collective breath. Aveline Hawthorne. She was not the frightened servant girl they remembered being dragged through these very doors 4 years earlier. She moved like someone who owned the room she walked into, because in nearly every way that actually mattered to the kingdom's continued survival, she did. Jewels glittered against her dark skin, catching and scattering the light with every careful step. Her gown shimmered faintly even in the muted indoor light, woven from her own famous enchanted fabric, a fact that several merchants in attendance immediately recognized and began whispering about excitedly. She did not look at the nobles who had once laughed openly at her humiliation. She did not need to. Their opinions of her no longer carried any weight in the world she had built without them. Gauvin rose from his throne so abruptly that his chair scraped harshly against the marble floor, the sound echoing through the suddenly silent hall. "Aveline," he said, her name barely escaping his throat, his voice cracking in a way that drew startled glances from several nearby advisors. She met his eyes with a calm composure that frightened him far more thoroughly than any anger ever could have. "Your Majesty," she said evenly, her tone perfectly professional, betraying nothing of the storm of emotion she had spent the entire carriage ride preparing herself to suppress. "It's been a long time." But it was not Aveline's stunning transformation that stopped Gauvin's heart entirely in his chest, that made the room around him seem to tilt and blur at the edges. It was the boys standing beside her, watching him with frank, unhidden curiosity. Golden eyes, his own eyes, unmistakable to anyone who had ever looked closely at his own reflection. Unmistakable wolf marks along their jawlines, faint but absolutely visible even from across the hall to anyone who knew what to look for. Features that mirrored his own at that exact age, features he recognized instantly and completely because he had seen faded portraits of himself as a child hanging in this very palace's private gallery his entire life, his knees nearly buckled beneath him. "Those are," he started, his voice breaking completely, unable to finish the sentence. "My sons," Aveline said simply, her voice steady despite the enormous weight of the moment. "Orion and Lucian, they are 9 years old this spring." Seraphina Nightshade, seated in her customary place of honor near the throne, went pale as bleached bone, her composed expression cracking for just a fraction of a second before she forced it back into place. The entire court understood in that single frozen, breathless moment exactly what they were looking at, exactly what it meant. The servant girl they had mocked and humiliated, the pregnancy they had collectively dismissed as a desperate lie, the truth they had so eagerly buried 4 years earlier, now standing directly in front of them in golden silk and quiet, devastating power, holding the literal future of the kingdom's survival in the palm of her hand. Gauvin stepped down from the throne slowly, unsteadily, as though approaching something he was genuinely terrified might vanish if he moved too quickly or made the wrong sound. "Aveline," he whispered, stopping a careful distance away. "I didn't know. I swear to you, before anything you still hold against me, I did not know." "No," she agreed quietly, her voice carrying clearly through the silent hall. "You didn't want to know. There is a significant difference between those two things, Your Majesty, and I have had 4 years to understand exactly what that difference cost me." Egerton, standing protectively beside her, said nothing, but his hand rested lightly and reassuringly against the small of her back, a quiet, steadying presence that did not go unnoticed by anyone watching closely, least of all Gauvin himself. "Shall we proceed with the trade discussions?" Aveline continued, her tone shifting smoothly back into businesslike efficiency, as though the previous exchange had simply been a minor formality to get through before the real work began. "I understand your kingdom's harvests have failed rather badly. I happen to have considerable resources that could address that problem. The terms, however, will be entirely mine to set." That evening, alone in the guest chambers prepared for her, Aveline allowed herself, for the first time in years, to fully feel the weight of standing once again inside Moonfall Palace's walls. The room was finer than anything she had ever been given as a servant, but the view from its window looked out over the same gardens where she had once believed herself loved completely. She did not cry. She simply sat with the memory for a long while, letting it pass through her like weather, before closing the curtains and turning her attention back to the ledgers waiting on the desk. Egerton found her there an hour later, knocking softly before entering. "You don't have to do this," he said quietly. "Eustace can finish the negotiations. We can leave tonight if you want to." "I know," Aveline said, looking up at him with something steady in her eyes. "But I'm not running from this palace twice, Egerton. Not even when leaving would be easier. I want them to watch me walk through it on my own terms this time." Egerton nodded, understanding completely, and said nothing further, simply settling into the chair across from her desk to keep her company while she worked, the quiet scratch of her quill against parchment the only sound in the room for the rest of that long, eventful night. For several tense weeks following that first devastating encounter, the Alpha Kingdom's continued survival rested almost entirely in Aveline's capable hands, and she understood that fact with perfect, unflinching clarity. She did not rush the negotiations, despite the Council's increasingly desperate pressure for speed. She let them beg, politely but unmistakably, across multiple meetings spread deliberately over many days. She let nobles who had once turned their backs on her in the kitchens, who had laughed at her trial, stand patiently in receiving lines outside her guest chambers, hats in hand, requesting audiences she granted entirely at her own convenience, sometimes making them wait hours for a meeting that lasted mere minutes. She demanded fair, generous terms for every farmer whose harvest had failed through no fault of their own, for every healer whose modest wages had been quietly cut during the kingdom's financial decline, for every servant the old court had carelessly mistreated over the years, terms far more generous to the common people of the kingdom than to the nobility who had so eagerly wronged her. "You're punishing them," Govan said to her one evening, finding her alone in the palace gardens after watching yet another humbled noble house leave her temporary chambers significantly poorer than they had arrived. "The entire court, I mean. Not just the people who actually deserve it." "I'm correcting them," Aveline replied without looking up from the trade document spread across the stone table in front of her. "There's a meaningful difference, Your Majesty. Remember, you taught me that distinction yourself 4 years ago in front of the entire court." Govan flinched visibly at the reminder, but said nothing further, simply standing at a respectful distance while she finished reviewing the latest set of proposed terms. It was during this tense period of careful negotiation that Eustace Viron's quiet, patient investigation finally bore fruit. Digging methodically through the royal archives over several long nights, cross-referencing dates and signatures with an obsessive thoroughness that surprised even himself, he uncovered the healer's original unaltered report from 4 years prior, a sealed document that had been deliberately buried beneath layers of false paperwork, stating clearly and unambiguously that Aveline's pregnancy predated any possible relationship between her and any other man besides Govan, directly confirming the truth the court had so eagerly chosen to disbelieve. He found careful correspondence between Seraphina Nightshade and the healer Renna, detailing exact payment amounts in exchange for false testimony. He found records of payments made to several witnesses who had since conveniently and permanently left the kingdom entirely, never to be heard from again. He brought the complete collection of evidence directly to Govan late one night, laying it out across the king's private study without ceremony or softening. "She forged it," Eustace said grimly, his voice tight with barely contained anger on Aveline's behalf. "All of it, from the very beginning. the original accusation, the supposed witnesses, the so-called medical proof. Lady Seraphina Nightshade manufactured this entire scandal from nothing, Your Majesty, and you let her destroy an innocent woman's life because it was easier than questioning what you were being told. Gavan sat in stunned, devastated silence for a long time, staring at the damning documents spread across his desk, the full weight of 4 lost years pressing down on him with crushing finality. The exposure that followed was swift, public, and utterly merciless. Seraphina Nightshade was summoned before a formal hearing of the entire court, her elaborate schemes laid bare in exacting detail before the very same nobles who had once cheered enthusiastically for Aveline's humiliating banishment. She wept theatrically, begged for mercy, attempted to shift blame onto everyone around her, the healer, her own family, even Gauvin himself for being foolish enough to believe her. Nobody in that hall defended her. The same nobles who had once applauded her cruel accusations now applauded her dramatic downfall with equal hypocritical enthusiasm, and Aveline found their shifting loyalty almost more disgusting than the original crime itself. The healer Renna, located after months of careful searching by Eustace's contacts and brought back to the kingdom under guarantee of leniency in exchange for honest testimony, stood before the court trembling and finally told the truth she had buried for 4 years. "She paid me," Renna admitted, unable to look at Aveline directly. "I needed the coin. My mother was dying and I needed the coin, and Lady Seraphina made it very easy to convince myself it didn't matter. I am sorry. I know that means nothing now, but I am sorry." Aveline said nothing in response, only nodded once, accepting the apology without offering forgiveness she didn't yet feel ready to give. Some wounds, she had learned, did not close simply because someone finally admitted to causing them. "They'll cheer for absolutely anyone who appears to be winning," she murmured to Egerton that night, watching from a quiet balcony as the hearing's aftermath continued echoing through the palace below them. It was never genuinely about right or wrong to most of them, Egerton. It was only ever about which way the wind happened to be blowing on any given day. "Then let the wind blow in your favor for once," Egerton said quietly, stepping closer beside her. "You've earned that much at the very least." She leaned into him, just slightly, the small gesture carrying more weight than either of them said aloud. Below them, the lights of Moonfall Palace burned on, indifferent as always to the lives rearranged within its walls, and for a long moment neither of them spoke, content simply to stand together in the quiet aftermath of a victory that had taken 4 long years to arrive. But Seraphina Nightshade, cornered, completely exposed, and stripped of nearly everything she had spent her entire calculated life building, was not yet finished fighting. With nothing significant left to lose, she made one final, desperate, and deeply dangerous move, one that would put everything Aveline had fought so hard to build directly and immediately in danger. She had nothing left to lose, and that singular fact made her in that moment more genuinely dangerous than she had ever been at the height of her carefully constructed power. The attack came at midnight, exactly 3 days before Seraphina's formal banishment from the kingdom was scheduled to be carried out before the full court. Hired mercenaries, paid with the last remnants of Seraphina's carefully hidden gold reserves, slipped quietly into the palace gardens where the twins had been allowed to play earlier that same evening, believing, wrongly, but with the desperate logic of someone who had run entirely out of options, that if the king's newly acknowledged heirs simply disappeared, the scandal that had so thoroughly destroyed her position might somehow disappear along with them. It was Gemini who noticed first. his keen face senses catching the unmistakable scent of unfamiliar intruders moving through the garden hedges long before any human palace guard would have detected anything wrong at all. He raised the alarm seconds before the mercenaries reached the twins' shared chambers, his voice cutting through the quiet night with an urgency that sent the entire palace into immediate, controlled chaos. What followed was several minutes of genuine, terrifying chaos. Egerton arrived within moments of the alarm, moving with the kind of speed that only centuries of dedicated Fae training could grant a person, placing himself bodily between the armed intruders and the two frightened boys without a single second of hesitation. Gauvin arrived almost simultaneously, sword already drawn, fighting alongside the very man who had quietly raised his sons in his absence for the past 4 years. Two fathers, in every sense that truly mattered, standing shoulder to shoulder in genuine battle for the first time in either of their lives. It should have been impossible. Two men with every reason to resent each other fighting in perfect, instinctive coordination. It should have felt bitter, awkward, charged with old grievances. Instead, in the desperate heat of battle, something unspoken and entirely unexpected passed between them. A shared, urgent, overwhelming need to protect two boys who belonged in different but equally real ways to them both. "Left side!" Gauvin shouted, and Egerton pivoted instantly without question, trusting the warning completely, despite 4 years of complicated history standing between them. For a brief moment, fighting back to back against the same threat, the old distance between them dissolved entirely, replaced by something neither man would have predicted that morning, a wordless battlefield understanding that whatever else separated them, this single thing did not. The mercenaries, outmatched and increasingly desperate, were subdued within minutes by the combined efforts of palace guards, Gemini's fierce intervention, and the unexpected alliance of the two men fighting to protect the twins. The boys themselves were found safe, shaken and frightened, but entirely unharmed, clinging tightly to Aveline the moment she reached their chambers, her heart pounding with a fear more intense than anything she'd experienced, even on the night of her own banishment. "I'm here," she told them over and over, holding them close, her voice trembling despite her best efforts to remain calm for their sake. "I'm here. You're safe. I'm not going anywhere." Seraphina Nightshade was discovered the following morning, having attempted to flee deep into the surrounding forest under cover of darkness, finally caught at the very edge of the kingdom's border by Eustace Viron and a determined contingent of palace guards who had tracked her movements through the night. She offered no real defense when confronted with the evidence of the attempted assassination. There was, by that point, genuinely nothing left for her to defend. The court's mood the following morning was unlike anything the palace had seen in years. Servants who had once whispered cruel things about Aveline now spoke her name with something close to reverence. Nobles who had laughed at her trial avoided her gaze entirely in the corridors, their earlier confidence replaced by something far more humble. Even the youngest pages, too young to remember the original scandal, seemed to understand instinctively that something significant had shifted in the very foundation of the kingdom. 3 days later, in front of the entire restored and carefully assembled Full Moon Court, Gauvin Mannix did something no Alpha King in the kingdom's living memory had ever once done before. He knelt. "I failed you," he said, his voice carrying clearly and steadily through the absolutely silent hall, every noble present holding their breath to hear what came next. "I failed our sons before I even knew they existed. I let my own pride and poison I didn't even recognize was poisoning me, and a deep, ugly fear of looking foolish convinced me to throw away the single best thing that has ever happened to this kingdom, and to me personally. I am asking you now, not as your king, but simply as a man who has spent 4 years regretting a single terrible night, for your forgiveness. And if you'll allow it, for the chance to become the father I should have been to our sons from the very beginning. The entire court held its collective breath, watching with rapt, breathless attention. Every single noble who had once laughed at her humiliating banishment now watched in complete silence, waiting to discover what the woman they had so thoroughly wronged would ultimately choose to do. Aveline looked at him for a long, considering moment, the weight of 4 years passing visibly across her composed face. She thought of the snow, the bone-deep cold, the months of starvation and rejection. She thought of every single night she had cried herself to exhausted sleep, genuinely believing she and her children would die forgotten somewhere in the wilderness, unmourned by a kingdom that had already decided they didn't matter. Then she thought of Egerton, who had asked for absolutely nothing in return, who had simply chosen her and her sons again and again, day after day for 4 consistent years, with no conditions ever attached to that choice. "I forgive you," she said finally, and the entire hall seemed to exhale at once. "You may absolutely be a part of your sons' lives, Gauvin. They deserve that relationship, regardless of everything that happened between their parents. But I will not be returning to this palace as your queen. That particular chapter of my life closed a long time ago, somewhere in the snow outside these very walls." Gasps rippled audibly through the assembled hall. "You loved me when I had absolutely nothing to offer you in return," she said, turning deliberately to face Egerton, who stood quietly at the edge of the room, clearly unwilling to push himself forward into a moment that wasn't entirely his to claim. "You chose me before I was wealthy, before I held any real power, before I was anyone the rest of the world considered worth choosing at all. You chose me when I was simply a frightened, starving woman dying beneath a tree in your forest." She crossed the room slowly and took his hand in front of the entire watching court, the gesture deliberate and unmistakable. "Gauvin loved me only after he had already lost me," she said softly, her voice carrying clearly despite its gentleness. "But Egerton loved me when there was nothing left in me to love yet. That is the difference that matters most to me. That is my choice, and I am making it freely, with my whole heart." Orion and Lucian, who had been standing nearby watching the entire proceeding with wide, solemn eyes, ran immediately to Egerton's side without a single moment of hesitation, and he lifted them both into his arms at once, the family they had all quietly built together over 4 patient years, finally standing whole and entirely unhidden in front of the very kingdom that had once tried so hard to throw them away. Gauvin did not argue, did not protest. He simply nodded slowly, swallowing whatever remaining pride he had carried into that hall, and accepted the place he had been generously offered, not as a husband or king beside her, but as a father given an unexpected second chance he knew he had not fully earned, but would spend the rest of his life genuinely trying to deserve. "Thank you," he said quietly, meeting her eyes one final time, "for more than I have any right to ask for." "Don't thank me," Aveline replied, her voice gentle but firm. "Just be the father they deserve, starting today. That's the only thanks I want from you, Gauvin." Later that evening, after the formal court had dispersed and the candles in the great hall had burned low, Aveline found herself once more standing in the same gardens where she had once spent stolen hours believing herself loved without condition. The roses had grown wild in 4 years of neglect, climbing untrained over the old stone benches. She did not feel the ache she had expected to feel standing there. She felt only a quiet, settled kind of peace, the sort that comes only after a long and difficult journey finally reaches solid ground. Egerton found her there a few minutes later, the twins already asleep in the chambers prepared for them, and said nothing at first, simply standing beside her in comfortable silence. "Do you regret any of it?" he asked finally. "The wilderness, the cold, all of it. If none of that had happened, you'd never have found Aurelun. You'd never have found me." Aveline considered the question seriously, the way she considered most things now. "I regret the pain," she said. "I will never pretend the wilderness wasn't real or that it didn't nearly kill me. But I don't regret where it led. Some doors only open because another one was slammed shut first. The servant girl who had once been dragged through golden doors and out into the freezing snow had returned, 4 years later, not as a beggar seeking mercy, but as the woman who held the fate of three kingdoms steady in the palm of her hand, and she had chosen, finally and completely and on her own terms, the one person who had never once asked her to prove she was worth choosing at all. And that's where Aveline's story ends, but if you made it this far, you clearly have excellent taste, a strong tolerance for emotional damage, and absolutely no plans tonight. So do yourself a favor, hit subscribe, ring the bell, and join us for the next royal disaster, because trust me, somewhere out there, another fictional king is about to make a truly terrible decision, and you will not want to miss it.